I know what I know. Let the now and know what you know. I know you know
we
it.
We know what we know. But none of us knows a thing about youth hockey.
Hello and welcome to the Youth Hockey Podcast, Episode 7. We are rambling into the month of September at a fever pace. I don't think anything can stop us here at the Youth Hockey Podcast train, but except our own trains of thought. Perhaps those are the one things that will derail us in this in our progress forward. Today, I have the topic, I have the comp, so I'm going to start off with the idea of teams that have folded in the middle of the year, Coach. I have a bit of a bad story from the California Heat recently. Their 14-year-old team, I guess they took some kids up to the AA team, and there weren't enough kids then on the A team, and so the entire team folded before the season even began. Now, have you ever heard of such a thing, or is this like something? Is this a unicorn, or is this something that that we've heard of before, where teams are occasionally left out to dry?
Yeah, I've heard of it before.
I thought so, Coach. What do you got? Give me some of your best.
I was going to say, do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, please do.
No, I'm just saying that's not something that is a unicorn. It happens. And it often is this type of circumstance. It's a nucleus or a group that leaves and the rest of the thing just implodes, not shortly thereafter.
Now, can you think of a time, now I'm letting you know the Heat thing. Can you think of a time that it's actually happened where you were left there either watching or from afar, or is this something that's happened?
It's not happened to me, but like I know of, I know, for example, a couple years ago, maybe this is so not long ago, like, okay. So going back 2 years, kid that my son played with at 15s, he went to a team in New England. My son went to a team in New England. That team had played, I think, about 10 games, and the 16s team disbanded, for whatever reasons. A bunch of the kids ended up playing on the 18s team. So this is kind of where I think what happened. You know, they didn't have enough. They lost some kids from the 18s team. They then grabbed a bunch of the kids from the 16s team.
They grabbed the kids from the other team. Yeah.
All I know is that team had, like I said, whatever, 10 games, and then it was it ended. Oh, and I had another reason to know about it because one of the kids from that team, you know, the small hockey world, ended up joining my son's team for a while. That 16th year. So yeah.
Nice. Well,
let me ask you, which is the better alternative? If you're a club and you're in this situation, is it better to let the higher team just fold and the lower team continue as it's continued? Or is it better, like they do, to grab a bunch of players from a lower tier team, bring them up, and then that higher tier team is horrible?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's a bit of both on that, but you do want to say that you have a tier program sometimes, and so if you let a tier program completely die, that can make you look a little bad. I don't know which is better for the kids though. For the kids, I think it would be better just to let them naturally have their levels and play at the level where they're at. But for the club, you know, I think it's a different thing.
Well, also some kind of conversation had to happen, such that the kids that were in the lower team had to be convinced that this was going to be good for them.
Oh, no conversation has to happen, Coach. You know, kids, exactly. You know, parents are like, you want me on the AA team? Of course. What time can I be there to wash your car? I'd love it. Thank you. You know, they don't.
And not only that, but you got to understand, Randy, that those conversations, I guarantee you those conversations, they don't walk in and say, excuse me, Mr. Gifford, but, we're in danger of losing this team. We got no other option, but we'll take your kid. Do you mind if we push him up to a higher level? they always approach you, Mr. Gibb, your kid is so good. They're doing themselves a disservice. They
really identified your kid as one of the top kids in the A program anywhere.
Exactly.
Right. And we've also identified that you're fully paid and thus a perfect candidate.
Oh, everything's going right. Everybody's going right for me today. You know, I can just see me like sitting there going, yes, this is going to be so awesome. And not thinking about, you know, the consequences.
Exactly. And all us parents, man, we get hooked in hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. We buy that story every time.
Yeah, no, I think that in general, what you're going to see is a coach coming in and saying, Mr. and Mrs. Alexander, your kid is obviously the top of the A roster. And we'd like to see him develop more and have more time on the ice and get with our premier coach here at the blank establishment. Let's move him up. Let's just move him up.
Yeah, remember, this was Mike Day. So let me, I'll refresh you guys' memory on my experience when both my kids were just so drastically being undervalued and they have to move up to the travel team because they were so great and they're just going to light the world on fire and we need that training. And meanwhile, stupid me, I'm going home to my wife and going, I knew it. I told you. I knew that these kids were natural born heroes. And remember, Randy, now fast forward from August to March when the season ended. And remember, we're getting emails from people. Hey, we had to suffer through your crappy kid for an entire season. You don't get a voice in anything.
Hey, at least they're honest. You know what I mean? You cannot fault these people for being honest at the end of the season. Nice of them to finally show who they really are. But yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. We have been on a team that almost dissolved. I remember I was on a team in Pasadena that there were only 9 players. And they tried to put us together with the other team. And they had like 10 players. And it was going to be a team of 19 players. And I was like, no, I'm not driving there for that. No, thanks. But thank you.
Right.
And then they changed their minds. They said, okay, we'll do a 10 player team. And they grabbed another kid and we played. But yeah, I wasn't going to, even then, you know, I was pretty young in the whole hockey world, but even then I was like, oh, I'm not driving down here to play on an 18 player team. You know, it's already crazy enough.
Well, you recall when we, our kids went from one age group to another. And that first year, we went to a new program, new coaches, ballyhooed coaches had arrived to create this tier program. And, you know, our kids end up making the team as first year players. We didn't really know what that meant, but we thought our kids were pretty good.
Oh, your kid had a terrific tryout that year, if you remember correctly.
He had a pretty good tryout that
year. A really good tryout.
But so then we had a team meeting. And what we've discovered, unbeknownst to us, is that there was a lot of parents there who felt that this was going to be an A team and were very vehement that they did not have the talent level to make a double A team. And we, you know, of course, came up and tried out for a double A team. So we're like, yeah, we're double A. I think we suspected it would be, it was going to be an uphill battle, as it certainly was that year. But man, there was some parents there that were livid in that first meeting, but a game had not even been played. We had maybe we'd had a practice or two. I don't remember.
But we won like six.
What is going
games
on? What?
It wasn't likely we lost all our games that year. We won like 6 games or something like that, didn't we?
Yeah, 6 out of 20 games.
Yeah, no. I'm not saying it was beautiful. I'm just saying, you know, when you're 0-20 or when you're 6-14, there's a big difference.
Isn't this somewhat your perspective too? That that you're, I think we've talked about this before. When you're younger, you're like, hey, this is, you know, no, okay, we're losing, you know, the majority of our games here. But we're competing.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
And you know, our kids are the
next year.
You know,
they're gonna
first
be great.
Years.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, so it's like, you know, you don't really have to confront. And most of the parents of the second year players were much more upset about it. Although I also will say that I always felt like that club had a couple coaches that were just absolutely notorious for sandbag. And so, you know, you kind of had to question, is this, are if you don't sort of, you know, put your foot down and say, we're going to compete in this, at this level, you never will. Especially if traditionally what you're trying to do is have a team that could be, let's say, the A level, and you're instead taking that team and making them double B, and you're just destroying everybody all year. So I've seen things on both sides of it, but a lot of the times these kind of decisions are what lead to consternation, and then a person or two leaves, and the next thing you know, you have no team.
Well, you know, you brought up a good segue for a little similar topic, but it's something that I think has also got some fertile ground. The idea of like people who dig in their heels about playing a level up from where you think that they should be. That's not a terrible, because we've had that happen a few times. A few times we've been on a team and they said, yeah, we're going B. And there was somebody in the room that was like, no, we're going A. And I'm just sitting there going, uh-oh, because there's only like 12 kids in the room. If six people go A and six people go B, we don't have a team at all.
Right.
So
this team no longer exists.
Yeah, exactly. I do remember a couple times where there was a little conflict about because somebody thought that we should be playing a much higher level than where, you know, reasonable people would say that, but they were the loudest. I mean, they usually, the people that want to go up are the loudest voices in that room, and unfortunately sometimes they get listened to. So I did have a little anecdote for that queued up for this, by the way. There was a Canadian junior hockey team that quit mid-season last year, and it was called the Pinoca Stampeders. After five games, how much had they been outscored? They quit after five games. How far? What was the plus minus? How many more goals had the teams scored than they had scored after five games?
I'm going to say they were minus 75.
Coach,
that's a great number. I'm going to even go minus 80, minus 81.
Minus 103 is what they were. Minus 103.
Our imaginations couldn't even.
Yeah, you could not.
Man.
They've been, you know, but if you count the last game, it was 125-3, because I guess they went, did one more game that didn't count. So it was 125-3. Was the final count.
Was anyone on the ice? Because I just don't even see logistically how you can get 125 pucks in a net. Like, but that's,
you can
that's
see how you might quit after losing. And here's the stretch: 23-1, 25-1, 20-1, and 20-0.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're getting beat by 20 goals. It's it's not good.
That's a team that needs to fold. I mean, that's even worse than than a Rain team playing in the double A division. The average double A Rain team, I believe, loses by 18 goals a session. So, but I'm not.
Well, this is the problem, like with leveling too. So I'll use as an example, the year that my son played Squirt B, his first year of hockey, he played on a team, and it was a bad team. There's no doubt about it, but it was a B team. Two teams in that league beat our team by 18, 19 goals. But they also did that to the vast majority of the teams in the B league. They were an A team playing in B.
Yeah, and I hate to see that.
They beat everybody by these ridiculous scores. Every kid had, 100 points on the team. It was absurd. And why were you playing B? What were you getting out of it? Your team was an A team. you were curb stomping everybody. And the only teams, of course, it got to the, you know, playoffs, and the only team that you had to worry about possibly losing to was the other team that was beating everybody ridiculously. Then there was a team that
we had a little comeuppance on that during Gabe's squirt year. It was a team that beat everybody by about 10. And then in the finals, they lost. If it makes you feel any better. Yeah, no, this was a team that had definitely thought they had a banner at the end of the year.
I was going to bring up a team that we know.
So far ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
There was kids that that played on this team that we ended up playing on a tier two team. And there was a bunch of kids there that the year before had played B. Now, our kids had not. They played double A. So this was a second year, a bunch of kids playing double A. Well, some of these kids that played – oh, sorry, it was double B. Some of these kids that played double B were very good. They ended up quickly matriculating up to triple A within a year from this whole thing happening. And our team was a real good team in many ways and filled with talent. And it was almost entirely a second year team, but those kids that played on that double B team the year before never lost a game the entire season. Not only did they not lose a game, they were never behind in a game in the entire season.
Wow.
The championship comes. And of course, what happens? They get behind. Coach panics, full on panic. He's moving kids around. He's taking one of his best players and putting him back on D, something the kid has not done all year. He doesn't know what to do. The team folds under the pressure and they lose. A team that hadn't lost or been behind the entire season, they did not win the double B championship. That's maybe a cautionary tale for what's the point of the competition? Is sandbagging to the point that everybody feels great because we are absolutely pooping on everybody every game? Is that great for development? I think, you know, you try. I understand if it happens because it's just the way it happens. But that particular coach who, you know, right, was a good guy and a good coach, you guys know who I'm talking about, I'm pretty sure. He was sort of that was the word around town because I didn't know him. Ultimately my kid did some coaches sessions with him and he was a real good coach, but
are you talking about the French Canadian guy or who?
It's another, well, yeah, maybe we can talk about it afterwards. You guys know who it is. I know you do. Okay. But anyway, you know, he was at Valencia for a long time. And did a lot of coaching for Valencia and sort of had his own, had a little bit of, he had some friction between new regimes that came in, but anyway, he coached there, and he was sort of known for if he had a legit A team, he was going to play double B. If he had a double A team, he was going to play A. It was just known.
Sounds like savvy. It totally sounds like savvy.
Well, I didn't want to actually say who it was.
That totally sounds like Savvy.
That's exactly who we're talking about.
Oh, okay.
We're going to have to cut this whole thing now because now we've flat out told a terrible story about a team. But anyway.
No, I don't think that's a terrible story. I think it's just it's a story that many people have lived through. And I don't think that Savvy was a bad guy.
He's a great guy. I honestly, like if you just ask me about the person, was he a good coach? Yes. What did he make kids better? Yes. Did he coach a lot of kids up there? Absolutely. I mean, he was well liked.
Did he tell
Lance's kid to be a sandbagger?
Did he tell Lance's kid to let the door hit them on their way out? Yes, he did.
Right.
He didn't tell my kids. He told me.
That's what I thought. Yeah, no. He was not one of Lance's favorites because he basically told him, "Yeah, don't let the door hit you on the way out."
Well, there's a lot of coaches like that. There's a coach I know back in on the East Coast who there was a kid that my son played with, and I got to be friends with the dad. He told me it's the exact same story. The kid played on that one club team for a bunch of years, did privates with this guy. You know, was a real one of his good students. Decided to join the team that my son was on, and the coach literally said, "I don't ever want to see you in this rink again." It's not a story that is unique to Valencia by any means.
Yeah, I know. Let's face it. The hockey is a contact sport, especially especially in those trenches, which we call mite and squirt. That's where a lot of injuries happen to egos, not
isn't
to
that
anything
funny
else.
Though, Randy?
Just to egos. Yeah.
That Go is ahead, just Lance. So funny that you say that, because like you said, I look back in all the major controversies and they all happened when my kids were like 10 and under. You know, I don't remember as much controversy as they got over, you know, here and there, some issues, but a lot of it was, man, at the mite and the squirt level.
Yeah, no, people were calling each other assholes in the locker room at squirt level. I remember that. And that was on a good team. You know, that was on a decent team, a team that it was doing pretty well. And the parents are like, you know, just like hammering on each other in the locker room. And Lance and I are sitting in the corner going, wonder when this is, you know, because usually it's like Iowa nice, right? Pasadena, you usually think they're pretty nice people. Jesus, you rip off that mask, those people will eat you for lunch. I mean, right. They
remember
will give
the apparent fist fights in the lobby. And
I remember the Bears and the Heat getting into a fist fight in the Valencia parking lot. Lobby. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is something that I've told before. The punchline, of course, is that the Bears parent had such bad aim is that he swung at the Heat parent and hit his daughter. So the only person that gets injured out of a Bears Heat fight is a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's awful.
That's terrible.
I mean, yeah, I don't mean to laugh, except to say, that's just what hockey is like. It's not like I think the pain and suffering is funny. I think the fact that these idiots were even thinking of throwing down in a parking lot to be so absurd that I can't really take that seriously. Although I do feel very bad for the poor.
And what could possibly have happened in a squirt level hockey game that gets you so riled up from one team to another?
Ask Bakersfield. Bakersfield can get riled up in a like a mite level hockey game if somebody, you know, like Jesus, Bakersfield is so ready to throw down. I mean, honestly, I think the parents come with sticks too. There's something.
Yeah, going up to play a high school hockey game in Bakersfield, you are in for it, man. You're in for something.
Oh, and what I don't understand is, if you are, let's say, miserable in your own life, let's say you're miserable in your own life and you live in Bakersfield. This is not you, number one Bako dad. You're the best. We love you, Kevin. Hashtag great guy. But there's a lot of Bako parents that are so miserable in their lives that they get angry.
And he's calling out an entire city.
Yeah, it's an entire city. But he's just so angry. They're so frigging angry that they show up just dressed to explode. They're on a hair trigger. They're ready. I still remember when, like, a Halliday coach almost walked off the ice there because, like, they were just hitting kids. They were like punching them in the back of the head, and it's like mites or squirts or something. And the Bako kids are going frigging feral. And we almost had to leave the arena because he's like, no, just I can't have my kids get hurt. And I was like, you go, Mark. You know, it was one of those nice moments.
Yeah, we played a high school game up there that was just nutty. And I actually saw a kid.
Well, high school
take
least...
the one of the worst hits I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I really thought it just shows you that you can't tell. Thankfully, it was not as bad as it looked. But I saw a guy, a kid who was maybe 190 run a kid who was 120 and just destroy this kid, and no call, because of course the local refs did not see that this guy who weighed 190, you know, crushed a kid that weighed 120 on a charging call, you know, where he charged into this kid from about from the bench, I think. And like a missile, and just destroyed this kid, and no penalty. I couldn't believe it.
Worst I ever saw, a 6'5" kid playing on a AAA team against the Rain team. A 5'4" girl is playing defense, and she's holding the line. I'm no, wait. This is and this is the only time I really had a great respect for like the refs. I think, you know, I have respect for the refs, but this was like huge. This guy crushes her at the line, just runs right over her and goes in. And the ref skates across in the middle of the play, like just blowing his whistle, pissed off at this guy. He's like, what in the hell is wrong with you? You're winning 6-1. What the hell? 10 minutes. You're in the box for 10 minutes. And if that girl doesn't get up, I'm going to make sure you don't play again. And you know, he's, and this guy is just an idiot, right? He's like, okay, I'm going to the box. The girl got up. It was okay. But, you know, there are some idiot, players that come from places where anger and brutality are celebrated so much that you just it makes the sport a little numbing. It makes it hard to enjoy the sport. And that was my worst time for that was Riverside. Although it was a shining moment for the ref. The girl got up to her own credit. You know, she was probably 110, got up, skated to the thing, and she didn't play again. But she
at least the ref, saw it. Wait, what made it egregious in the Bakersfield game was that the guy didn't call a penalty. I couldn't believe it. Like it was the definition of charging, and you know, the kid. I don't know how he shook it off. I really don't. Like if I had a video of it and could show people, it was just unbelievable. Cause the instant it happened, I was like, oh no. Like I was just sure the kid was knocked unconscious. I guess he wasn't. So
there you go.
Great for him. But, gotta police that stuff. And, you know, the fact that it's, I hate to say it, but it's Homer reffing. Like, you're not doing your job there, buddy. But anyway,
yeah. I had one more story of an almost my son played in high school in Utah, and they were going to fold because they didn't have enough players for the playoffs. They got one extra player at the right time and they made a deep drive and they actually played in the finals. But there are times when these pains of, you know, like will the team form or not actually leads to a good outcome. But a lot of times also, you know, it is a very unsteady situation to be when you're playing on a team. Even if you sign up, that does not necessarily mean that team, I mean, there are some places where you're fine and you know what those places are, but there are other situations where you can find yourself in a very tenuous position even after signing up for a team.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All sorts of stuff can happen. And I also will say, like, there's no real conclusion that can be drawn because the teams that everybody wants to be on, that had the full tryouts and half the team, you know, maybe 90% of the teams picked beforehand.
Right.
I saw something where I was, there was a discussion about a team recently, and the person was talking about his concern about whether or not his kid was going to make this particular team. There's a bunch of other things I won't go into, but the league, it was described as that about half of the kids that were going to try out were not going to make these teams because there's some like 6-team league and there's some, you know, inordinate number of players trying out, and that we're going to make one of these 6 teams, and that, so the guy threw out the number of whatever it was, and I did the math and was like, are you saying that every team has 25 players per team? I'm like, what level of hockey? Like if this is what I thought it was, which was like maybe Pee-wee or Bantam at worst, I'm sorry, that's too many players. Like why are you honestly telling me that you've got a team with that's got 20 skaters? So in other words, you've got 4 full lines, 4 sets of D, 4 lines of forwards. You someone's going to lose out. There's just not enough ice time. And at the younger ages, I would opt every time for a team that maybe was marginal, but was going to have a small roster, so that I knew at most 3 lines, you know, maybe a kid drops off and suddenly we got to go two centers and 3 pairs of wings or rotate or something. But
and
something
don't feel
where your
bad
kid's going to get ice time.
Don't feel bad about plan B, or the lowest level. Every kid starts at the lowest level. There were kids on the AA team last year that were very suspect of my daughter playing. She only played 1 year before. She played B, and then she went up to double A. And you saw her, Raleigh. She was just as good as, I mean, I'm not saying that she was like dominant or anything like that, but she was pretty good in that group. She was not.
You can't always base it on XYZ kid played on this level before.
No, that's what I mean. But don't feel bad about playing B. You can go from B to where, you know, your kid's growth curve could go anywhere. I would say just let him play a lot. Don't feel like you have to play him on the AAA team if the B team is in town and he can get on the ice all the time and all of his friends love him for being one of the best players and life is good.
Yeah, if your choices between playing on this highly desirable whatever it might be AA, AAA team and you're new to the thing and you're looking at, you know, honestly looking at it and you're saying my kid's done pretty well here. And they, you know, you get offered the offer and everything, but there's a good chance your kid's going to be third, fourth line. Meanwhile, you could go play for the double A team and have your kid be on the first line. turn down the offer. You will not regret it.
That goes from A to B as well. Yeah.
Yeah. No. AA, AAA, AAA on the way up and down wherever your kid will play. And if it's a smaller team, and I would just argue that smaller teams are just better because everybody on a smaller team gets better.
Right. Yeah. And everyone's playing.
Yeah. Yep. And they have to play with the, you know, they have to actually work as a team and you know, the team might lose more than it wins, but everybody's probably going to get better if the team has any success at all.
On their shoulder too, coach. A little chip on your shoulder sometimes.
I've seen a lot of teams where the coaches just played the crap out of a small group of players, and nobody, you know, those players get better, but the team, you know, it doesn't prove anything to me. I think anybody can take, you know, the best players that are playing at a particular moment in time, or maybe had the most experience or the most ready at that moment, and just play the crap out of them. That's not good coaching. It might be winning coaching in certain circumstances, but especially if your kid's on the outside of that little ring, you kind of tend to wonder what are we doing here? Like what are we getting out of this? Anyway.
Well, coach, I love your passion and I love your message. And it's getting a little late out here where I am. And I don't mean to cut you off, but if you don't mind, gentlemen, I was going to shut this down.
I think that our fans
our fan
appreciate being shut down at this point.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. And know that even if there's instability on your team, and even if it looks like there might be something going on, you'll eventually land on your feet. The kid will too. You'll find another place and you'll play hockey, which is the greatest sport that kids can play, if you ask me. So from the coach, sound off, coach.
I just wanted to thank you for keeping us up. Yeah. Optimism.
Thank you, coach.
Providing that optimistic thing, making everybody see the grass. Well, I don't know. This sun will come through tomorrow.
I believe that's an Annie quote, and I really appreciate it. Lance, would you like to leave us with anything uplifting?
Sure. Keep on writing to us. We love it.
Yeah, we do. Go to youthhockeypodcast@gmail.com. And if you review us, we will come to your house and we will wash your dog. That's the new offer. We'll come to your house and wash your dog if you review us positively. I wanted to get that in there because you're not getting a dog wash for telling us we're jerks.
Yeah, it's got to be all, you know, it's got to be four
all flowers. All good stuff.
I don't care if the review says we're terrible, 4 stars.
Yeah, we can just look at that, you know, it won't show it on the star thing. It'll just say, you know, the number, and that's all we care about. So anyway, guys, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.
Remember to visit Gabe Gifford Hockey. The link is in the description and the webpage below.